Okay, guys. Thanks everyone else for sharing, helping us open the meeting. We're doing readings and take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. We're really glad you're with us. Huge welcome to any visitors and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in a room tonight. We hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So we do have a speaker tonight, and it's my privilege to introduce them. I've known this individual for a number of years. I've had the privilege actually of him allowing me to walk with him on some of his journey. I've watched him grow and change and achieve great things in his own recovery, and I'm really looking forward to him sharing his experience, strength and hope with us tonight, for 40, 45 minutes, whatever he's comfortable with. I'll leave him to tell you about his clean date and how long he's been in the program. So without further ado, Rene, please jump in and share with us, my friend. The floor is yours. Just unmute your mic. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Steve. I'm smiling from ear to ear. No one can see me and I haven't got, you know, but ain't got to worry about how I look or anything like that. But yeah, so my name's Rene and I'm an addict. And,
hi, Rene, welcome.
Hi, Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hello. And so I have sent this link out to a few people, and so if it seems like there's a few extra people, it might be due to that, or it might be that you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, so experience, strength, and hope, and I'm just looking at a list of people. Some of you have seen online when this was on the Blue Jeans platform a few years ago, and one or two, at least one, would have been when we was on the UKNA website. I think it was on what they call that thing, JavaScript, I think, and you had to type your share out. So, well, I just want to sort of like reassure everybody as well. It's 8 minutes or 11 minutes past six. I'm not going to share for 45 minutes. It's just, I ain't really got that in me, you know. I really kind of, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and sort of say, give me a few seconds to get my ego out of the way, because, you know, I'd think it would take a lifetime to do that. That'll probably disappear when I'm dead. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, coming into NA was, you know, me drug use was like, you know, it was Moorish. You know, I was an addict. I was an addict before I thought I was an addict. And I was in a lot of denial, thinking that I wasn't an addict in some respects, because I had this notion, going back to the 70s, that whatever it was that I was doing, I could control it and I could stop it. And it just happened to be that I didn't want to stop it. You know, I didn't want to stop it. And some of my using, I'd say, was quite spiteful. You know, mother died when I was seven. My father got remarried in 1969. I was nine, and he gave me some information. When Jimi Hendrix died, it was we was watching the news, black and white telly we had, and my dad made a comment about drug dealers. And his view, you know, he was a policeman. My mother was a born-again Christian and my new mother was an atheist. So there was the chalk and cheese stuff. He said, drug dealers, they should put them up against the wall and shoot them, you know. And that was what he left me with, really, you know. And anyway, so, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I just progress through, you know, I was shoplifting from a young age, and that became addictive, and lying became something that was, you know, something that I was, you know, it became habitual to lie, because I had to guard the wrong that I was doing, you know, and the places where I was and the places where I was on the way home from school and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, moving on into the 80s, you know, I was getting, you know, I got kicked out my dad's house at 1878. That was, and you know, a succession of dysfunctional relationships, all sort of drug related, you know, and they didn't seem to last that long. Or more to the point, the ones that didn't involve drugs didn't last that long, you know, and the ones that involved drugs seemed to sort of have a bit more staying power, because with that common, the common denominator was that we both liked drugs, or that would have to be sort of like prerequisite for the relationship to continue. I get some, you get some, and we use together, and you know, and so it was crime, sex, and you know, sex, drugs, and a little bit of rock and roll. You know, I'd listen to music. Didn't get to a lot of gigs because me using got in the way of that. Occasionally, I'd get to one here and there, but it, you know, it wasn't me primary purpose was to find ways and means to get more. So, yeah, it was just pretty much that's what it was for me. Gosh, where was I? So 82, bit of jail time. I got some jail, went away. I lost some remission in that time. I traveled around a few prisons in London and out into the countryside, and then back into London. I was an abscondee threat, and you know, so they you know, and I got released. When I got released from my first prison sentence, I was in Duquesne Road in Wormwood Scrubs, and when I come out, you know, it was just, you know, a very, you know, my girlfriend wasn't my wife, we was married then, you know, she wasn't there to meet me, you know, there was no flashbulb cameras or anything like that, you know. I just made my way to, you know, White City Underground, and made my way home. And, you know, and I'd already had a drink on the way. You know, I was going to go straight. My plan was I was going to go straight. And, but a drink was okay. So, by the time I got home, my wife, she had some drugs there waiting for us. And in a matter of days, because I was never going to inject. I didn't inject for a number of years. So I was 23. I come out, and within a few days, another friend of mine came out, and she brought up the subject of injecting, and I was, well, see, the thing is, she picked up the needle when I was away, and I was going to come out, I was going to rescue her, I was going to get her off the drugs, and I was going to go and get a job. And I, you know, God knows how I was going to get a job, because I wasn't very good at it, and I didn't think about looking for work. And you know, if I ever bumped into my dad, I just to soften the blow at times, you know, because by that time the spite seemed to have gone, you know some of me using was like I wanted to work my dad, because he armed me with something that I knew he didn't like, and I didn't like stuff that he did, namely being married again, you know. So I was quite self-centered, and anyway, so he armed me with that, and after a while, you know, as time went on, I'd bump into him and, how you doing, any work? And I'd say, well, I've just been down the job center. It was all lies, you know, and I've got an interview. There was no interview. There was none of that. And I think after a while, he kind of got used to it, you know what I mean? I could see the sadness, and sometimes I'd go around his house and he'd drop me off somewhere. And my stepmom, the one I hated, would give me some money. I'd go and score, and I'd leave my dad crying in the car, you know, and, you know, sadly, me dad passed away in 1998, had an heart attack in his sleep. And, I'd been in and out of jail through all up until that time, all the way up until 2002, for acquisitive crime, you know, short-term stuff. And, you know, the longest I got was 2.5 years for some shoplifting. And that was a year put on top of an 18-month suspended sentence. So, yeah, which I thought was a liberty. I thought, what a liberty. How can you do that to me? You know, I'm in a jail, and there's a guy next to me doing 15 months of manslaughter, you know, a fight with his father and all that went wrong. Guy fell down the stairs, broke his neck, died. And I thought, well, all I was doing was this. I justified everything, you know what I mean? And
and anything that kind of happened, you know. I came into recovery a classic victim. You know, the first meeting I went to was in Gravesend, and sometimes I don't acknowledge it because I didn't have a desire to stop using. And I had a desire to get out of the rain. I just had some, by that time, you know, I'd been on a needle for about nearly 20 years. It was 83 to 2000. So, yeah, and I delivered some heroin. I was with this girl. And she was in a women's refuge, and you know the title says it all. I was unwelcome, I guess, and I'd been seen going in by one of her peers in this building, and she said it was on top, and that I had to go, and I said, well, where am I going to go? It's tipping down with rain out there, and she said, well, there's an NA meeting. I said, what's that? She said, well, we can get a cup of tea. I'll come with you. And we stay out of the rain, right? So that's, I thought, okay. So in terms of tradition free, you know, I didn't have the desire to stop using, but I had a desire to stay out of the rain and, you know, something warming me. And, you know, at the end of the meeting, you know, it was, you know, the rain had stopped. I'd gouged out in the meeting and there was someone in the meeting who I'd used with who was clean. They looked brand spanking new. And that's kind of most of what I noticed, apart from the end bit when we held hands and it was a serenity prayer. I didn't know the lyrics. It didn't really matter. I was anaesthetized. Perhaps if I hadn't have been, then I might have felt less than or inadequate and all that stuff. But that stuff didn't come up. Looking back, it may have done had I been straight. So what happened was about 18 months later, I found myself in Belmarsh Prison, another one of our Majesty's. Oh, His Majesty's prisons now, I suppose it is now. He's got a king these days. But there was a meeting on, and being an expert, you know, on the back of going to one meeting, smashed out my head, you know, I got to this meeting, you know, after landing up, so he unlocked me. And my motive then was perhaps I can get some drugs, you know, perhaps, you know, I've got an idea this is not what it's about, but the doors open, you know, and they done a round robin thing, type of H&I thing. The guy turned up, and it was strange because the guy who was taking it, he goes, oh, I remember you. You was in that meeting in Gravesend. So I'll always remember being remembered in that sort of situation. You know, it's kind of, yeah, it was, yeah, they probably remember just like some of that. Junkie, you know, he's here, and you know, and yeah, so it was a surprise for him to see me in the meeting, and I suppose it was a surprise for him to see me. Oh, you're in this meeting, but all I remember sharing something about, look, you know, just beyond the walls of Belmarsh, there was a road called Sewell Road in Abbey Wood, and one of the guys used to score off, you know, one of the you know, dealers, you know, was, you know, so it was really, it's like that line out the Tom Petty record, you know, American Girl. And there's a line in it, God, it's so painful when something that's so close, but still so far out of reach. And that applied to drugs in the situation. I felt quite frustrated coming out of there. I got a few dog ends off some guy, or I nipped into the landing office, and I got an handful of sugar or a spoon in one hand and some dog ends in the other. And you know, I was one of the most uninfluential kind of prisoners you could imagine, you know. You know, picking up dog ends off the landing floor, and the shame, you know, when someone would sort of catch you, you'd hear swooper, you know, and all that kind of thing. And, you know, and just want the ground to open up and swallow your hole. You know, it's kind of synonymous with a use up. A lot of feelings are like that, you know, and I get that in recovery. I've noticed that whenever I've worked, you know, and I've got an alarm clock and it goes off and I want to press the snooze button, there's the unwillingness to engage. Or I remember I went through a rehab and they'd, you know, I didn't want to get up and they'd call it duvet diving, or I'd want to have an half an hour sort of siesta in the afternoon and they wouldn't let me. No, you got to go to bed at a certain time, got to get up at a certain, you know, and I hated all that, you know. But they was trying to teach me some structure, and I didn't really kind of, you know, I weren't really au fait with that to start with, I was kind of like, well, you know, it's but there we go. And so after that, that was 2001, 2003, I suffered a form of broken neck, ended up in hospital with this kind of cage, you know, like screwed onto my head. It made shoplifting more difficult. I couldn't turn my head around. It was like I turned my whole body around to see things, and my agility, the agility factor was, and the running factor was kind of like hampered by it. So, you know, it just made things more difficult. I mean, I'm sort of saying that made things more difficult. But what happened is that I suppose it was me that made my life more difficult. You know, it took me a while, you know, after coming into NA. And I come into NA with a desire, you know, to get some help. So I phoned the helpline on October the 22nd, 2003. It was a Wednesday. I was living in a flat. My brother let me live about, he was a Christian, rest his soul. He passed away when I was 5 years clean. He wasn't an addict, he got cancer, but he was, you know, he distributed Bibles. You know, he was 9 years older than me. So when our mother died, he was 16. He probably had the indoctrination and he stayed with it. I was living in this flat above the Bible. So, you know, part of me was thinking, if I sit on a stack of Bibles, it will all go away, all this bad, bad shit, you know. And it didn't sort of work like that. You know, I ended up using in the place. I was trying to get off. I was on my methadone, doing it on my own again and trying that thing. And someone in the hospital, prior to living at my brother's, had given me the NA helpline number. I didn't ring it straight away, but I rang it on that day, and I was in this flat. And the guy on the helpline said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in Plumstead." He said, "Let me have a look a minute." And I assume now he was looking through where to find. He said, "There's a meeting in Blackheath." And it was just like a coincidence. I was born in Blackheath in southeast London. So that, and I like the place. It was my childhood time there. You know, my first 4 years, you know, the days when my dad would carry me on his shoulders and sometimes I think it would be so nice to have someone carry me. I can be like that sometimes, you know, I remember I come into contact with things like people talking about rescuing and caretaking when I was in rehab. And sometimes the way I viewed those things was as qualities that someone had, you know, rather than anything else, you know, caretaking and rescuing, you know, people helping out. But I later learned it was something else, and I had to do this thing called responsibility, which I didn't take to, like a duck takes the water, you know, like responsibility. I mean, I was good at spelling. I knew what it meant. It was one of the worst words I've come across. And, you know, I come to NA and I was saying, "Give me a day," like, you know, but I kept hearing that I had to put one foot in front of the other and, you know, a day at a time. And, you know, and the meeting I got to, I said to the guy, "Look, how clean are you?" At the end of the meeting, he said, "I'm 9.5 years clean." I was like, "What, not even a drink or a puff? You know, you must be crazy." And he said, "Well, come here." And he took me over to the literature table. And on the literature table was all this stuff. And he picked this thing up called a Where to Find, which was a meeting directory. And he wrote on the back his name and number. And he wrote these words: "Pick up the phone, not the drugs." And that, out of all the things, when I've had moments of stress in recovery, or I felt like broken, you know, I felt like I'm having a breakdown of sorts, you know, that is, you know, even though initially I don't sort of think, "Oh, I've got to ring someone up, I'll be all right." It's like at the end of the line, when I'm feeling suicidal, or I'm feeling I want to, you know, kill someone and kill myself, and using comes into it. Suicide and using, they sort of come along. And at that point, you know, and after punching myself in the head a few times, I end up picking the phone up. So I get there, at least I get there. But there's a lot of, you know, I've got a 24-hour illness. You know, I read this in the basic text, and, you know, I've got a disease that centers in the mind. You know, it hasn't gone anywhere. It's still with me now. part of what I'm doing right now. I'm at work, I'm skiving, so there's a bit of dishonesty there. It sort of alleviates it a little bit by sharing it, getting honest about it, you know what I mean? Yeah, so since coming to NA, things slowly got better. There was a moment where I tried to rescue the person who gave me the phone number because they went back out there using. I'm trying to tell them about NA, getting back to NA. I've got a can of cider in my hand, you know, and I'm on methadone. So I needed help. So I still needed help, but I didn't kind of recognize it. So I went back into street drugs again. And then I ended up getting this drug testing treatment order. I ended up going into these places. H and I come in. Some of the people had seen me in the rooms, knew me, and was glad to see that I was doing something about it. Basically, I was forced into submission, not by anyone else, but by my own behavior, by my own hands, by, you know, by everything that I was doing and, you know, bringing upon myself, I guess, you know what I mean? I didn't realize I had a disease, but, you know, took me a while to get my head around that. I used to put my hand on my forehead and think, well, I've got no temperature. There's no fever. I'm not ill like you lot. But I knew that I didn't know how to live life without drugs. And I noticed that you lot did. And that you kept going, you know, I'd go to a meeting on Monday night and the following Monday night, you lot would all be there again. I'd go on the Tuesday and you lot would all be there again. And it'd be like, everywhere I'd go and I'd see other people that was in the meeting on Monday night on a Wednesday night. And so I was doing this day at a time thing. I followed the thing, you know, I guess they call that surrender, you know, I ended up doing all that. And today I'm 7,222 days clean, which is 19 years and 9 months and about 8 days, something like that. And but essentially I'm a white keyring man, so I try to do this stuff to the best of my ability. You know, I'm not a saint. I ain't read anywhere in the basic text or any of the other books. Well, you know, when you get to 19 years, you better have acquired some sort of sainthood. I still live with this stuff. I still have to take my inventory to get a better day for myself. I have an habit of taking other people's inventory, and that doesn't seem to work too well for me. You know, I find that if I do that for too long, I start getting quite angry, resentful. You know, I become unwell quite quickly, like spiritually unwell. And so there's the answer in it. Like, wipe my own ass, not everybody else's. And yeah, I feel better for it. Yeah, work. I've done some work, but this ain't about work, the program. You know, I've been through the steps. I've got a sponsor. Steve mentioned earlier, was my sponsor for almost a decade, or the lion's share of a decade. We both stay clean, you know, and I know he does meetings. I still do them. It's kind of like I cottoned on. It was like follow the leader. And, you know, I know a leader's of a trust his servants, they do not govern. I remember they used to read out the traditions down in Bristol, and there was an abbot in some meetings. At the end of that bit, some would shout out, after they do not govern, it would be, thank God, you know, that used to bring a smile on my face, you know what I mean? Because I thought there was people like that, you know, and then I cottoned on, you know, that we're all equal, you know, through the process of going through the steps and reading the content in the traditions, you know, and about equality. And there's only one requirement for membership. And I've got a desire. I don't want to use today, you know, and the most important day for me is always the day that I'm living in. It could be argued the day I phoned up the helpline or the first day I got clean, and some of the days in between, you know, starting a relationship, ending a relationship, or being sort of thrown out of one, you know, or whatever, you know. You know, I've experienced all that stuff, you know, betrayal, abandonment, rejection. And then what I've cottoned on to more recently is that where I sort of like played a victim and look what you've done to me, I recognize that
in some instances or in a lot of situations that I've actually betrayed myself or rejected myself, come close to it, certainly when I'm punching myself in the head. And that's only happened the one time. You know, I was about 15 years clean at the time, and some kind of, you know, external factors were at play. And I just felt totally sort of unloved, unlovable, and all that, sorry for myself. And I just thought, what's the point, you know? Because I have days where it's like, is this it? Is this it? I've got to do it again. You know, what happened to this, you know, being happy and being joyous and free, which I suspect might have come from another fellowship, but it's there nonetheless. I've heard it, you know, and yeah, you know, it's sometimes is a push, and it sometimes is me clawing myself my way through the day. And there's a reading, I think, November the 17th in the regular, just for a day, you know, walking through the pain. And I can identify with that, you know what I mean? And how that looks for me sometimes is, and some of the things I've heard, which ain't in the basic text, would be saying that someone might have said outside of a meeting. I was in Bristol the one time, and this guy, he's gone, Ren, you're going to have to grow long fingernails. And I was like, what have I got to do that for? What do you mean? He said, well, some days you're just going to have to hang on, you know. I was like, oh, right. And he went, also, you're going to need a strong pair of shoes. I went, what for? He said, well, because there's going to be a lot more walking than talking, you know. And so, you know, they put a smile on my face, and I, you know. But the important stuff, I mean, that has been helpful. But the really important stuff is, like, in our reading cards, I suppose they're selected for a reason, you know, because they're quite impactful, you know, and you know, one is too many. I mean, you know, and 1,000 never enough. And I thought, well, that's my experience, because I have one, and I want some more, and I want some more, and I want some more. And you know, and yeah, 1,000. Well, I keep going. So for me to use is like pushing over that domino and setting off that reaction. It's the next one. It's the next one and the next one. And, you know, in my rear view mirror, and I look at what happens when I pick up one, is that it don't seem to stop. You know, it don't seem to stop. I know it has stopped, and I've got all these days, but, you know, the main difference for me is that I've come to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I haven't gone to any of the other places that have, you know, given me any sort of length of recovery or clean time. And yeah, so that's the only difference. And it was a place I didn't really want to come to, you know what I mean? Because initially my thought was sitting in a room. I don't trust addicts. I don't trust, you know, it's quite derogatory in my sort of, the words I use. I don't trust junkies at the best of times or at any time, you know what I mean? And the promises that I've made to myself, I could no longer trust myself. You know, I convinced myself I was never going to use the times I got released from jails and institutions during the 80s and the 90s. You know, I was convinced. You know, and then it just wore off, that kind of shock and surprise, because I knew what was coming. You know, kind of resignation that I was going to end my days, you know, like that, using them. And so the intervention might be the rain that fell in Gravesend that night, because hadn't it been raining, I wouldn't have gone to that meeting. I know that much. So, and funnily enough, my relationship with water has improved, as in, you know, I have a shower every day, you know, I wash every day, you know what I mean? Things are clean, you know, there's no ingrained dirt in my hand, no dirt under my fingernails, you know, I clip my nails, and just the usual kind of personal hygiene is kind of, you know, relatively good. Do you know what I mean? I like to smell quite the things that the products that I used to steal to sell, you know, I don't steal them, I buy them now, and I use them. Do you know what I mean? I'm clean shaven, and generally, you know, I might miss the odd day, but yeah, it's just given me a whole sort of better life, you know. And Yeah, what can I say? Like, I've been talking for ages, longer than I said I'd talk. Was it 11, 22, 33? That's like over half an hour, I think. So that's me. Thanks very much. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah, it, you know, it's I feel a bit emotional now because the story could have been so different, so different. So, yeah, that's me. Thank you.